Our Fiber Talk guest this week is Carolyn Manning of Carolyn Manning Designs. The show is sponsored by Avlia Folk Embroidery and Sassy Jack's Stitchery. Designer Krista West of Avlia Folk Embroidery can help with your search for Stitcher Christmas gifts. On her list are Avlia Needleminders, inspired by Byzantine designs. Seven beautiful motifs are available at $10 each. For someone who is interested in exploring embroidery, select one of the Avlia Embroidery Hoop Kits. They include everything you need to stitch the project, including the hoop. Also consider one of the many Avlia table runners, including the Oak Park Diamonds design inspired by prairie-style leaded glass. Not sure what to buy? Give an Avlia gift card so your fellow stitcher or significant other can make their own selection. Learn more at avliafolkembroidery.com. Gift cards are also a great option at Sassy Jack Stitchery, where you can also purchase Avlia charts and kits. In addition to a huge selection of charts, threads, ground cloth options, and various stitching accessories, Sassy Jacks has in stock the new Design Collective Christmas book from the publishers of Inspirations magazine, and a limited number of copies of the 2023 Whitney Antiques Exhibition catalog. Either would make a special gift for a spouse, partner, or your favorite stitching friend. Be sure to put your name on the Black Swans Studios mailing list. Black Swans is a coalition of like-minded needlework artisans created by Kim Young and Jackie DePlessis that will focus on sharing collected knowledge and skills with today's needleworkers through multiple learning channels. The first event from the studios will be March 19 to 21 in Asheville, North Carolina. It will feature an impressive museum-quality band sampler from 1747. Registration is now open at sassyjackstitchery.com. Thanks to Avlia Folk Embroidery and Sassy Jack Stitchery for sponsoring the show, and now our conversation with Carolyn Manning. Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr, and you are listening to Fiber Talk, the twice-weekly podcast for needlework artists. Artist this week from Carolyn Manning Designs, Carolyn Manning. Carolyn, welcome.
Hello, thank you.
Oh, thanks for doing this. Been paying attention to you for some time now, and really glad to be able to talk to you about your art. It's different. My reading, see if I'm right on this, is that we get a real strong mandala flavor in a lot of them, and then heavy quilt designs.
Correct. Yep. I actually started out doing a lot of magazine work. And back then it was a lot of more of a caricature. I did a lot of snowmen and those kinds of things. And somewhere along the line, things kind of evolved. I do a lot of actual fabric design and some quilting on the side. So that's kind of where the quilting aspect of it came from. Uh-huh. And I really like to work symmetrical myself, so I think that's kind of where the mandala thing got pulled in to the designing as well.
Yeah, well, all right. That's because I love the symmetry. That's what attracts mm-hmm. me is yep. is the because that just works in my mind. I hate things that are out of whack, so I don't hate them, but you know, I'd rather
I
have
know what you mean.
Yeah,
yep.
The balance has to be there. Yeah. So designing fabrics, that's a quite different world. You still do that?
Yes, I do. It started out more. I do have some fabrics available on Spoonflower.
I've heard of that. That's the place, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. And I started out doing some of the things, designing digitally using different filters and such of photos. I go out and take a lot of really strange photographs from time to time, mostly like of tree bark and just odd things, stone surfaces, different textures, and then manipulate those in Photoshop and such. And the whole point was to come up with canvases that I could use for my freeform embroidery, just for my own personal uh-huh. art. And then it kind of evolved into some of the actual quilting fabrics as well. Yeah. you know, so I don't have anything out there in actual quilt shops and those kinds of things. It's just typically on spoon flour and then my own, using those fabrics for my own art.
Yeah. Okay. So, all right. So I connect with you there, and people are really tired, I'm sure, of me saying this, but I, at one time, not too many years ago, I did a lot of photography, and my favorite type of photography was macro work.
And, okay.
But it was not, you know, fill the frame with a flower. It was get closer, and you talk about tree bark and stones and stuff. Get closer and get the textures and the shapes that are within the item that you're photographing. And to me, that's where it's a whole different world of things. So you're doing the same thing then. You're finding those shapes and textures and then replicating them on cloth then.
Yes. Yep.
Oh. That's so much fun because it's a photographer, you know, one of those guys who knows everything, once told me when you come to a scene, especially if you're traveling and, you know, it's vacation or whatever, you know, take half dozen pictures of the scene. That's for the record. Then start taking it apart because that's where the real stuff is at. Yeah.
You know, cracks in the pavement.
Yeah.
That's a big one for me. I'm always looking. I'm looking down more than I'm looking up. A lot of the time when I'm photographing, you know, I go on my little walkabouts. In here in Minnesota, it gets a little bit tricky. You know, some of the seasons get a little bit rough to get out there and try to do any of that. But you know, ice and tree bark, like I mentioned. You know, the patterns of shadow and leaves on the ground, you know, all those kinds of things, really strange things catch my eye. It's not your usual typical landscapes or like you mentioned, you know, flowers, unless I'm getting in there and taking pictures of dead flowers.
Yeah.
Because textures and those kinds of things in some of those things that are returning to the earth, for lack of a better way of putting it, are the most interesting to me.
Oh, I agree. So people miss out on that. You know, in late fall, dead stuff is fascinating. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can spend hours because there's so much there that you don't see any other time of year. There's no way to. Yeah, and you get a little frost on it and a little snow. And,
exactly. Oh, yeah, yep. So So you know, and all of those things kind of lend themselves to not only my embroidery that I always try to do a warm up every day with some freeform embroidery in one shape, manner, or form. And a lot of that then lends itself into my actual cross stitch designing.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, everything kind of plays off of the previous, you know. So my picture's out there, then I'm futzing around with fabric design or using those fabrics for bases for embroidery. Then sometimes the designs that I come up with fabric actually translate into cross-stitch designs, and that's kind of how the whole quilting inspiration kind of tied into everything as well.
Does quilting actually happen, or is it just an art form for you that you convert into needlework?
I do some quilting. I've done a lot of crazy quilting, basically because there's a lot of embroidery involved in some of that. I've not done any really large scale quilts. I've done some smaller art quilt type things. Mm-hmm. And you know, and I like to do everything by hand. I've got a sewing machine and stuff, of course, but, I really like the pace of stitching by hand. Mm-hmm. It's just, there's just something, you know, and that holds true for the cross stitching process as well, stitching my models, just that pull through fabric with needle and fiber is just really relaxing for me. You know, some people they're just like, you know, I'm always telling stitchers that are doing my design, you know, if they're like, I can't stitch that fast, I'm like, it's not about stitching fast. It's about enjoying your journey and just really paying attention to how things are developing within the piece. And I think that with the symmetrical designs as well, back to that, as we were talking about before, I think, and I've been told that my designs, especially with the symmetry, it's just very relaxing for people because they know what's coming up. They don't have to keep referring to the pattern. Mm-hmm. They can just really kind of dive into the project and enjoy it.
Yeah.
versus, you know, all that sprinkling of colors and all that. And that has its place. And there's definitely people that do enjoy that, that kind of stitching as well. But I've kind of found my niche with people and with this style of designing.
Yeah, well, we've done shows about meditative stitching and, mm-hmm. and that very factor in a design, in that you can just sit down and move needle and thread, and the chart really can just sit off to the side because you know what to do and where to put it. Mm-hmm. And if there's a color change, it's the same shape but a different color, and it's relaxing. The heart rate slows. The
yep.
Blood pressure
and that's
goes
the whole
down.
Point. That's the whole point of handwork, yeah. to me, anyhow. You know, is being able to really just dive into a project and just enjoy it instead of stressing yourself out, because it shouldn't be stressful.
right.
Yeah.
It's interesting to me that you start out with some embroidery and that you do a lot of hand surface embroidery, but then your designs are just about all cross stitch. Is mm-hmm. it, how does that split in your head? Is it you just, the embroidery has got a freer thing to it that allows you to enjoy it more, or how does that work?
I have always love to embroider. My grandmother taught me how to embroider. Cross stitching, I kind of picked up on my own. I've always been a cross stitcher. But as far as the designing part of it, I just have always been dabbling in one form of art or another. So I've always been sketching, always been drawing, always been painting, doing something. And the cross stitching kind of started just kind of as a little side thing here. My mother and I, who my mom is a real big artist too, but she's more of the painting and all those kinds of things. We used to do craft shows together, and I used to make greeting cards, and I was doing cross stitch off on the side just for my own, you know, picking up patterns here or there. And my mom did gift bags, and then we coordinated the cards with the gift bags. Well, then I was looking, I was on a cross stitch board, chat board. I don't even remember where. I mean, this was, we're looking at 20 plus years ago now. And
back in the heyday of cross stitch,
back when we still were using floppy disks to save it.
There you go. Okay?
And internet was still dial up and all that fun stuff. But there was a question posed about making your own designs, and somewhere, and then I don't even remember what magazine it was for sure, but there was a floppy disk version of, I think it was called Digistitch, was the name of the program. It was one of the first charting programs that were out there. And I ordered it. And lo and behold, I could bring in, because I did all of my illustration stuff for the greeting cards on like just a basic drawing program on the computer. Uh-huh. And I could bring those images into Digistitch and turn them into cross stitch things.
There you go.
Well, then another gal on the chat board said, have you ever thought about submitting these to magazines? And then that's kind of how the whole thing started with the cross stitch part of it. Now the embroidery part of it, I've always just done, or started doing, I should say, just for myself. I just enjoyed waking up with that first cup of coffee in the morning and stitching.
Mm-hmm.
And then pretty soon things started kind of molding together a bit more, especially over the last, I'd say 5-6 years is when the embroidery really started to try to influence the cross stitch a little bit more. They weren't quite so separate. And I think the biggest crossover was the Flower a Day project.
Mm-hmm.
That started in 2017, excuse me, as a daily project for me over the course of 2017. I embroidered, freeform embroidered a flower using threads that I tangled up, threads that were in my grandmother's embroidery box and my great aunt's embroidery box. And I, for my base fabric, I used linen napkins that I had found, a set of four that I had found at the thrift store, which I do a lot with my embroidery. And so it ended up being this 36-inch by 36-inch humongous piece. And I think I sent you some images of that, the Flower Day project. And I had shown it in one of my Facebook groups, and they were like, wow, do you have a cross-stitch version of that? And so that's how the cross-stitch, which is like one of my biggest, most popular designs, is the Flower Day series and collection. Lot of stitchers doing that one. And the nice thing with that one is it encourages people to stitch every day. And you can use whatever you want to use. Mm-hmm. So if you've got one of those cookie tins of tangled up threads that you're wondering what you're going to do with, you know, you can't mess it up because, you know, it's whatever colors you're drawn to. Because that's what I did with the embroidery piece, is I just opened up my cookie tin every day and went, I think I want to stitch with this. And so once I got a length of yellow untangled from everything else, you know, then
there's a therapy in its own right.
Yeah, exactly. So that's kind of how that evolved. And some of my like embroidered flower, floral pieces and the bouquets and stuff like that, all came from things that I had done with my daily embroidery.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yep.
So it's feeding the cross stitch to some degree, but still separate as a
correct, as a
Carolyn thing that you just do for you.
Yes, yep. Yeah. And I give some of those things away as gifts, and have actually started to keep some things for myself. Usually, they either go into a trunk of some sort, or you know, and then I dig through it come Christmas time, and go, oh, I could make a pillow for so and so with this, or I could do this with whatever piece. So, yeah. So I look at my embroidery a lot of times as my warm up to the day, just my kind of my me time, sit and kind of get my thoughts together as far as what I might want to do. And then in looking at it and working through it, I'm going, oh, that might translate nice into whatever cross stitch design piece I might be working on. So
now, I've heard of people starting their day off with stitching, but it's, you know, it's because they want to work on a project and want to make sure they at least get a few stitches in during the day. But this is carrying a much more important element for your day, for you. It gets you oriented.
Yes, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. And I've been doing the cross-stitch designing my first magazine piece, which was very, very, like, sad for me because it was in 1999 and it was a piece that I actually stitched the model for Better Homes and Garden, I believe. I'm not sure if that's the exact publication, but it never made the magazine.
Oh.
And kind of ended up on the cutting room floor, so to speak.
Yep.
But then they made some changes with the issue and all that, but they kept it. And then it came out later. It was Ghosts, I believe. And then I did a skating snowman or something for another one of their publications. And that was in early 2000. And I did just magazine publication, a lot of magazine work for those first 5-6 years. And then I got picked up by a couple of distributors in 2004. Mm-hmm. And then that's when I actually started doing designs for wholesale distributors. And then they went to the shops from there.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Now your designs, wholesale, and you sell them off of your website?
Yes. The wholesale, they take care of the shops, and I used to send out print copies too. That was an option on my website. Until COVID hit.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was just too much for me to think about making trips. You know, we're on lockdown. I really did not want to make trips up to the post office and stuff like that too. So I wanted to support shops to help them get through the whole pandemic as well. So I just converted to just PDFs on my website now.
Yeah.
And it's been that way since 2020.
Yeah.
So the shops carry all my print stuff, and the website is just PDFs now at this point.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It'll be interesting in 4 or 5 years to see what happened to us during the pandemic, how much of it is still in place, or if there's a reversion. or you know, just how it changed stitching, because the downloadable PDFs are pretty prevalent these days. And then, you know, go to your shop or wherever and get your thread and your ground cloth. You know, how much of that will hold, or will people want to get back to getting the print versions? But then from your perspective, putting something together and sending it to a printer and storing it and shipping, for a lot of people, no thank you.
You know, I would say right now the stitchers that are working my designs, it's split pretty well down the middle. As far as those that are looking for print, because my orders from my distributors, as far as getting print copies, are pretty close to what I'm selling as far as PDFs.
Oh, interesting.
You know, there's still, you know, that generation that likes to work from the paper copy.
Yep.
I'll continue to do. I really pride myself in putting out designs that can reach everybody, as far, whether they're really into the technology and are using Pattern Keeper or whatever other means, or if they are the ones that like to, you know, we have people that get the PDFs and are printing out the PDFs. They don't even use a Pattern Keeper. They just like the immediacy of the PDF.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And getting it right away instead of having to wait by the mail, you know, kind of thing. So, so.
No, that's what I mean about how it will shake out, because you do have a generational thing where older people want the paper, want the printed thing. Young people want it on screen. They don't want to deal with paper anywhere. And I'm sure there's a transitional group of people that want one, the other, both, but will still print it out and mark it up. And, it's just going to be interesting to see how it all plays out, because it will. And then it changes the game, and you know, of course, ecologically, you know, do we really need to have all that paper? I don't know. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. You know, and that's kind of for me too, because I'm very big into the environment and those kinds of things too. So, being able to do the PDF form makes my little heart happy. Mm-hmm. But I also still see where a lot of shops are needing the print copy as well.
Right. Yeah, and we've had discussions, shops setting up computers, and you go in and you find your pattern, you download it, you print it, and then we'll help you kit it up as a way to still offer those PDFs that people want, but then as a shop, be right there, you can turn around and get your thing kitted up. So you know, that I've at least a couple of shops looking at that kind of an approach.
That's interesting. Yeah. I hadn't heard that before. Very interesting.
You know, charge a little bit more, or a little bit less, or what, you know, whatever it is. Because you know, when you look at it from a shop perspective, maybe that's some shelf space you can carry another line of thread.
Correct. Yep.
And there's nothing wrong with that. You know,
so. Oh, definitely. Definitely.
Yeah.
So
do you have a formal art background, or is this all just genetic and mom and grandma?
When I finished high school back long, long time ago, I actually started school in art, studio art, and worked through about 2.5 years of my degree in that with areas of concentration in ceramics and painting. Very different.
Yeah.
Like I mentioned before, I've always been doing something artistic, in one medium or another. I let somebody talk me into the fact that I would be a starving artist, that I would never be able to make it.
No.
So I switched my major to psychology, And then
wait, you went from starving artists to starving psychologists?
Imagine that. No, I worked in a group home for about almost 30 years.
Oh.
And I had two kids at home that I was raising, and I just couldn't make it on just the cross stitch. Even, you know, I found success pretty early with the cross stitch designing, especially when I started sending to wholesale distributors, and got kind of out of the magazine side of things. Although I still do a fair amount of work for magazines as well, just cross stitch in particular. And so I was still doing it, you know, kind of thing. And then the group home I was working at did a kind of a downsizing type thing. And after a number of years with them, I was let go. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of people back in, I think it was, I can't remember the exact year. So then I decided to go to our two-year college here. And so I went and got my graphic design degree.
Oh, okay.
From there. And so that kind of tied in a bit and has helped immensely with figuring out how to package things up and, you know, as far as the photography end of things and those kinds of things. So yes, I have some formal training, but I also did a lot of it just on my own, a lot of self-taught things as well. So,
yeah. How many people, that one door closes, opens up, blah, 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 whatever that saying is,
but, mm-hmm.
but it spurs you, to survive, but also, I think kind of frees your mind when you lose a job like that. You go, wait, all right, now what are my options? Let's you know, seize this opportunity,
right,
and see if we can go in a direction that I'm really going to enjoy. So,
right. Well, I ended up going back to the group home, in a different position. Yeah, because I had been in a managerial type of thing, and so I went back just as a part-time kind of person, and then in, I got to think here, 2018. Both my kids were grown, gone, off to college, had sworn they were never coming back. and they didn't.
Okay. Yet,
but, you know, kind of thing.
Credit for that.
But,
yep.
Yeah, there we go. And so then I was just like, you know, I could probably live on ramen noodles and bologna sandwiches again like I did in in college, you know. So I quit the job and took the leap and never looked back.
Yeah.
You
scary.
Know, that first year I was just like, oh my goodness, what have I done? Kind of, you know, oh, I'm never, you know. Well, then I started my first Facebook group. I was always on Facebook with my Facebook page, but I didn't actually have the group.
Mm-hmm.
And I started my first Stitch Along and in 2018, and it just went boom. It was just it just to the point where I'm like, I've got family going, you know, you really should take a couple of days off, because I'm like answering emails at Thanksgiving. You know,
Oh no.
And it's just like, well, I pride myself in my customer service and being prompt and answering questions, because I want people to enjoy their projects.
Sure.
And, you know, and I know, you know, sitting there waiting for some kind of a response as far as whether or not there's an error in this chart, or can I do this, or do you care if I switch colors? You know, I'm always just so like humbled by stitchers that worry so much about if I'm going to like go, well, why did they have to change that purple to blue, you know, or something like that. And it's like, it's your project, make it your project, you know, kind of thing. So I'm kind of getting off track here, but
no, that's all right. Well, but you know, that's interesting too, because if you think about it, email on Thanksgiving, that's when your customers have the free time to enjoy the stitching. And if you're holding them up, your lack of response holds them up, you know, then they might get frustrated. So yeah, there is a kind of a pressure to allow them to keep going.
And it takes me a whole, you know, 5 minutes to kick an email back.
Right.
You know, there's going to be sometimes when I'm away. But you know, I try to get back to people as quickly as I can, with those kinds of things, because, you know, I appreciate the eagerness. You know, if they took the time to drop me an email about this, it's my responsibility to get back to them as timely as I possibly can. So, yeah.
But still, mom, take terrible days off.
Yeah. So, but you know that this is all I do now, you know, so I feel it's part of my job.
Right.
Obviously, to be responsive and to make sure that I'm taking care of the people that are taking the time to actually stitch my projects.
So was it a very long time before your heart slowed down and you felt like, hey, I can make this work and maybe I don't have to eat ramen noodles around the clock?
Actually, yeah, I probably with, you know, about halfway through that first year.
Oh, okay.
I'm like, okay, you know, and especially when I made the decision to offer as PDFs, because then, you know, as much as stitchers were getting the PDFs because they wanted that instant gratification of getting that pattern in their hands, I was getting paid for them right away as well.
That helps.
So that helps, because otherwise, you know, like the wholesale distributors, my payment from them was coming like within those first 5 days of the beginning of the month.
Mm-hmm.
So you're sitting there going, oh, okay, am I going to sell enough print copy to be able to make it? That's where the biggest stressor was, I think, for me with that is are people really picking up my designs? Because you have no way of knowing, you know, until that report comes at the end of the month from the distributors.
Right.
Now with the PDFs, it's like I get an email right away saying, yeah, you have a sale, you know, so that really helped and kind of encouraged me to do a little bit more. So
yeah the old Sally Field Oscar thing, you actually like me.
yeah exactly.
Yep.
You know, and then the response to the actual stitch along and to the Facebook group, you know, I started to see the numbers growing even if they weren't necessarily picking out a pattern right away that they wanted to dive into, they were interested.
Yeah.
And that kind of encouraged me to get a little more creative and to find patterns, because I definitely have the group of people that are stitching my more whimsical things, and then you have the group that are more interested in the full coverage and the quilt designs and the samplers and those kinds of things. So as you might have noticed, if you've looked at my website, obviously, I've got a lot of different collections.
Yes, you do. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I looked.
I'm always trying to find something that so that there's something that appeals to everybody.
Mm-hmm. So once you go full time and say, all right, I'm going to put myself in the situation here. What does that do for you as an artist? Does that free you up to unload a bunch of designs from your mind, or does it free you up to now start to create where before it was one here, one there? What happened there?
I think what helps me the most where the whole creative process is going, is the fact that a lot of my designs, once I have my template, I can pull colors and dig in and like with the shooting stars, for example, those all come from one basic template. And then I just go in and plug in different colors and see what pops up right away. And then I go in and refine it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've had a lot of people go, oh my God, you just kicked out five designs. And it's like, but once I get in and I'm able to take a look at how the colors are coming together, and then the fact that it's symmetrical, and then I can okay, if I combine these two shapes, I have a whole different shape. And then, you know, so it just kind of morphs.
Right. Well, and, I enjoyed that. I enjoyed that looking at your work because, yeah, you'll establish a basic design and then it's mm-hmm. fun to watch you explore it.
Well, and I also am always open to what stitchers want with that too. Like I've had requests of, you know, I have a grandmother who really, really likes this. Would you ever think about doing something with this color palette?
Yeah.
And I like to do that kind of thing as well. And then all of a sudden I'm going, ooh, I'm kind of liking that too, you know,
yeah.
Or I pull from my own life, like, the grandma's lilac pattern. I have a big old lilac bush right outside my house here that my grandmother planted. And every year I look at it and go, that is such a cool memory for me, you know? And like there's like the bouquets, for example, it started out as a stitch along, and then I thought, I want to honor all of the women and young girls and young women in my family. So then they all became named after all the women in my family.
Okay.
You know, so there's, you know, there's always something that kind of pulls into it. And once I get a basic design, like again, like the shooting star designs or the broken star designs, for example, the shooting star design started with just it's a Texas star quilt block. And then I pulled it all together and then I'm going, oh, when I change up these colors, all of a sudden it's turning more into a mandala. Mm-hmm. And then pretty, you know, so it, everything. And then I'm going, and then I had some stitchers say, well, the big patterns, cause the biggest ones I think are, I got to think here, 199 stitches by 199 stitches. They end up being like 12 or 13 inches square on 14 count fabric.
Yeah.
And they're going, that's just way too big for me, you know?
Right.
And I went, okay, well, let's make some smalls then. So then I just kind of whittled them down. And then all of a sudden I had somebody else come to me and go, well, the smalls are too small. Can you do an in between, you know? So it's, they're always changing. And like, right. I have a stitch along that just started the Star Touched Meadow. And those are, I found that I could pull certain stitch. So the little diamonds in the original shooting stars are, I believe, 9 stitches by 9 stitches. And I found a way to reduce those to 5 by 5. So then that brought the full size pattern down to a much more manageable 77 stitches by 77 stitches, I think, are the blocks. They end up being like 6 inches square on, just under 6 inches square on 14 count fabric. So, and that stitch along just got going, but, that stitch along was, somebody requested it. They're like, we would love to see a shooting star, a reduced size shooting star stitch along.
Yeah.
So each of those blocks, and we just got started November 1st with that, with the November block, which is based on the colors of the chrysanthemum, because that's November's flower.
Okay.
So each month will be, the colors will be based on the flower for that particular month.
Yeah.
So
now,
yeah.
Responding to people like that and adjusting your designs and sizes and so on, do you still feel like you're able to stay true to your art with your designs, yet satisfy that? Or are you torn at times? Well, wait a minute, I want to do this because this is what my art says.
I think I'm okay with it.
Mm-hmm.
Because the it's usually requests based on my first original design.
Oh, okay.
So I've kind of gotten that feeling of, okay, I've accomplished this with this. These are my colors. This is my, I like how it's laying out and kind of, and the requests usually are just to make things more manageable for people, which I'm always fine with, because I've got the group that really does love the ginormous designs. But I also can respect the fact that, you know, they might have scraps of fabric that would work. But, you know, I'm always thinking about doing things in ways so that everybody can also manage the cost, because it's not a cheap hobby.
Right.
You know, so I want people to be able to use up what threads they might have on hand, you know, and might want to request if they change a color, or if they need something that's smaller, or some of the older stitchers that I have, they're like, my old eyes just don't work well mm-hmm. enough for a great big pattern like this. And I'm like, I can respect that because my eyes are getting old too. So, you know, so I really feel like it's all right to be making those changes, because I've already kind of put out the initial design. Yeah. And so now, and it's actually kind of a challenge for me too, to find a way to tweak the original design to appeal to other stitchers mm-hmm. as well. So,
okay. So basically you got the art out of your head and out of your system.
Yes.
And now mm-hmm. it's all right. How many different ways can people come to enjoy that piece?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Okay. Yep. Yeah. You know, I want it to be something that anybody that would want to stitch something like that design can do it, and do it comfortably, and do it so they're not stressing themselves out at all with it either. You know, if they're looking at the large shooting star design, they're going, oh, I really, really love this, but I'm so intimidated by it, yeah. You know? And I'm like, no, I don't want you to be intimidated by this, you know, let's get in. And actually a lot of the questions that I get from stitchers, is more of a, you know, how do I start this kind of thing? I've always been a middle starter. Can I start in the middle? I'm like, of course you can. Or you can measure in from the corner, whatever. And if I can help you with that, drop me another email and we'll talk through it. And I get a lot of those. I actually get a lot of those emails, especially from new stitchers. And that just makes me giddy, because I'm like, you know, no, cross stitch isn't a dying art.
Right, yeah.
You know, no, it's not. All you have to do is look on any of the social media platforms, and it's all over the place.
Oh yeah, no, it's not. You know? It's not dying at all. No,
no, no. No. So I'm always trying to find new ways to liven things up for people. I incorporate some specialty stitches that aren't going to leave people running off screaming, because they're like, I have no idea how to do that. No, it's very, very simple, but we'll get you through it, you know, yep, kind of thing. Yep. So.
Yeah. It's crazy how those things get started, you know, middle starter, upper left corner, upper right corner.
Yep. And I've always been a middle starter, and I think that's kind of where some of the mandala stuff came from. Oh. Mm-hmm. With the symmetry, because you get going and you know exactly what you need to stitch next.
Yep.
You get that first little corner quadrant on, you're going, oh, okay, so that needs to just go over there on the other side. So,
right.
Yeah. So,
yeah, see, I'm an upper left starter, but yeah, a mandala, I mean, I would almost feel obligated to start in the middle and let it expand from there.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. And that's what a lot of stitchers do. And like, a lot of my designs have kind of like an outline framework. Mm-hmm. Especially like the stained glass ones. And so I see a lot of people stitch that whole framework first, and then it's like a coloring book. And then they can just relax and find their color that they need to fill in those blocks with. And then they just sit and stitch.
Let her go.
Without having to refer to the pattern every other stitch.
Yep. So what is your... As a full-time designer, what is your day like? Do you keep a structure to it, or do you let it just...
I try.
I know the administrative stuff just got to get old after a while, but how does that work so that you can still have enough time to create?
Well, my entire downstairs of this big old house that I have, my house is 110 years old, I think, give or take. I've got enough room upstairs for a studio, but I just can't be bothered to keep going up and down the stairs at this point. So my whole dining room, when there's nobody around here, is covered with stuff. And I have a big old stitching chair with a table next to that. So I try to stick to my daily planner as much as I can. However, there's always that you get up to get a cup of coffee and then you do the dishes kind mm-hmm. of dilemma.
Right.
Or, you know, you go out and get the mail and go, oh, I should really switch the laundry dilemma. Yep. So there's that discipline kind of thing from working at home. And making this your full-time career, I've gotten better at it. The winter months are a lot easier for me because I'm not tempted to be outside putzing around in the garden, which has its place too, because I sketch when I'm outside a lot of times. But I try to start out my morning by hopping on the computer and answering any emails, maybe starting to putz around with a couple of designs. I've got several different programs, charting programs, and then I always block out a few hours to stitch. A lot of it depends on what I'm doing. I've got certain ones that I actually stitch the model for, and others that I just have my mock-up, mm-hmm. Kind of thing. So it just kind of depends on what I'm currently working on as far as how much time I devote to being on the computer versus sitting and doing some stitching. So I listen to a lot of podcasts while I'm stitching, and that helps a lot too. And my son got me into audiobooks, so I do a lot of that. Yeah. Or reruns that I can just listen to while I'm stitching kind of thing. But my days usually are split pretty much between half and half between administrative and designing stuff versus sitting and actually getting some stitching done. And like I mentioned before, I usually start my day with my cup of coffee and some kind of daily work, be it a quilting project or my embroidery. More often than not, it's my embroidery that I'm doing things with.
Yeah, when my wife and I started working at home, because we work at I'm a magazine editor, and so we work together. She does editorial production for us. And when we first started working at home, we found ourselves working long days and through the weekend. And and we had to have, at one point, we had to kind of have a meeting with ourselves and say, look, at 5 or 6 o'clock at night, we're stopping. And on Friday night, that's it till Monday. And because it's real easy to have it just consume
definitely.
You.
Definitely. You know, and I'm here by myself. So
you got nobody to stop you.
Other than, you know, if my sister calls or one of the kids messages me or something and they're like, you're still working. I'm just like, but I don't consider it as work.
Yeah.
I, you know, the sitting and the stitching and working on that kind of stuff, I'm sometimes doing until 11, 12 o'clock at night, just because I enjoy it. Mm-hmm. The administrative part, I've gotten better about shutting her down at, you know, 5, 6 o'clock at night and just saying, okay, I'm done. I'm not answering any emails or anything like that, you know, and part of the problem is I've got stitchers all over the world. So my phone is by my bed and I'll get up at 3 o'clock in the morning or whatever kind of thing, you know, to make that little trip to the little girl's room.
Right. Oh, don't look at the phone. No.
Yeah, I do that way too often. Then it's just like, and especially if it's a question about a pattern and you know, and then I'll be laying there going, okay, no, go back to sleep.
Yeah.
We're not going to go and wake up your computer to figure this out. It can wait the next 4 hours till you get up kind of thing.
Oh,
so,
man.
Yeah, I've gotten, gotten much better about that kind of thing. But as far as the actual stitching and the designing and those kinds of things, I'm always puttering around with something because it's kind of my downtime. I really just love to sit. I also do a lot of crocheting and that kind of, I can't knit to save my soul, but crocheting, I do a lot of that too. So I'm always putzing around with something, unless I'm gone.
Yeah. I've never understood that. You hear that. I've heard that more than once. I can crochet, but I can never knit, or I can knit and I don't get the crocheting thing at all. And to me, they look like the same. It's just this different movements, but I don't do either one.
I probably could pick up knitting if I really wanted to, but I've got so much going on that I don't need another something to try to figure out. So
yeah, and those two fascinate me because you'll watch seasoned knitters or crocheters; they can be anywhere doing anything, and those hands are just flying. And mm-hmm. it's like an out of person, an out of body experience for them.
Yeah.
It's just fascinating how they do that. And the next thing you know, they have a blanket. Well, how'd you do that? Yeah.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Crocheting, a lot of times I don't have to look at what I'm doing.
I can
lift my eyes and watch TV and crochet while I'm watching TV. Yeah. So it's, and my grandmother taught me how to do that too. So, she did a lot of those kinds of things, and she made these amazing braided wool rugs as well.
Oh,
the old fashioned ones.
Oh.
I still have one of her small ones here somewhere. I think it's still packed away from when I moved here, but it always amazes me at the strength it must have taken in her hands to, tight braid. And that's how she used to crochet and stitch too, was just these precise little bitty. And I'm just like, oh, man, it's just like, yeah, crazy.
Yeah.
But definitely.
Yeah. No, my grandma was a crocheter, quilter and crocheter. And I still have an Afghan. Blue is my favorite color. And she was making an Afghan for me when I went to college. And I said, Grandma, will you make it longer so that I don't have to scrunch up underneath it? And she did, and I still have that today. So I'm 68, so that was when I was, 18? And still have it today, and every time I haul it out, it's like, thanks, Grandma, for making it longer, because it's just, yeah, perfect, yeah. And the, the durability, for crying out loud, how many years and still...
Mm-hmm.
Still functional. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep. I have a lot of different pieces that, family members, my dad, when he was still with us, he was disabled and he used to do latch hook rugs.
Ah.
And, I have a cardinal that he did. It's actually hanging in my kitchen because he lived here too for a number of years before he passed away. But, so I've got a lot of family members that have puttered around with different fiber things, and they all just kind of look at me like, you're strange. I'm going, yeah, but I get to play with string for daily for a living. It's, hey.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. So. You mentioned your sketchbook. So you're one of those that is constantly sketching out ideas?
I have a stack probably. Yeah. There's one in the bag that goes anywhere with me. There's one beside my bed. I can't tell you how many designs I have come up with in the middle of the night. I wake up and go, I'm not going to remember this by morning. So I'll sit up and do a thumbnail real quick of something. And yeah, a lot of those. And a lot of my sketchbooks, actually, I've gotten as gifts from family members for Christmas and stuff. They're like, we always know what we can get you because you go through them like, you're crazy, Yeah, I'm always sketching something. Or, I can be in the restaurant and I'll pull out my sketchbook because I see a picture or I see a pattern or something will come to me all of a sudden. I'm like, oh, that would be really, really cool. Mm-hmm. Like I'll take pictures of backsplash tiles in bathrooms and, just the different patterns on wallpapers and even linoleum tiles and things like that are always, I'm always looking at that and doing quick sketches of stuff. Yeah.
How does that work for you then? Are some of them immediate action and then others just have to cook for a while?
I'd probably say equal parts of both.
Okay.
A lot of time, leaning probably a little bit more towards, I can't wait to get home and see if I can't make this, turn this into something. I'm always pulling stuff from my sketchbooks. A lot of times I've got the sketchbook right next to me. And if I'm having a design day, I'm always flipping through whichever sketchbook I've got, and pulling things from those. So, and I've got a huge database of quilt blocks, and those kinds of things too. And I'm saving pictures all the time from things that I've come across online, and going, I think I could whip something up with this as inspiration. I try not to do anything that is going to influence copyright at all or anything like that. Got to be real careful because that's one of my biggest bugaboos. I don't have as many problems with people swiping my stuff as some other designers do. Fortunately, I'm really fortunate in that regard. But it also makes me very, very aware and very careful and considerate of other people's artwork, and making sure that I'm making my designs and something else. So,
yeah, no, that's we've had discussions recently about that very topic because some people just have no qualms whatsoever about just lifting anything. And, it just irks me to no end because basically designers start to say, wait a minute, it's not worth it to me anymore.
Yep. And I have some designing friends that have given it up because they just, you know, and there's groups on Facebook that are just terrible about sharing designs. It gets to the point where, you know, you just can't police it all the time. It's just really frustrating.
Yeah.
It's like I try to keep my prices as reasonable as I possibly can. And I'm sorry, you just if you can't scrape together $5 for a pattern.
Hard to help them. Yeah.
Yeah, and they don't get it. It's just like, well, you know, and I'm just like, this is how I pay my bills,
right?
You know, and print copy that go to just to kind of get off on a little rant here. I'll make it short. I promise.
No, rant away because it needs to be talked about time and again because people just don't understand what happens.
You know, the print copy. You know, they're like, well, look at how many they sold, but what they don't get is the fact that like with the print copies. To my wholesalers, for example, an $8 pattern, I only get $4 for it.
Right.
When it goes to the wholesale,
right.
Or even less. And then you tack on print cost.
Yep.
You know, I'm probably making $2 on a print pattern.
Mm-hmm.
PDFs, same thing. You know, it's and I'm very, very lucky because the like I said, I've got very, very few problems with people violating the copyright and printing multiple copies of a PDF. And, you know, you can put all the disclaimers you want on your website. If somebody's going to make multiple copies and violate, they're going to violate.
Right.
There's not I can't keep track of it. But I do have a lot of stitchers that will message me and go, we found this on this. You know, and a lot of times it's on a website that I can't get it taken down,
mm-hmm.
like, you know, somewhere overseas.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff. That's right. A huge problem. That's where the bulk of my copyright violations come from, is from that kind of thing. Another one, I'm going to throw it out there. Pinterest.
Oh, yes. That cesspool. Oh.
Horrible.
Yeah.
You've got people scanning pages and then everything gets tacked to their additional people. And a lot of these guys don't even realize that they're violating copyright. They see it on Pinterest and go, ooh, it was a chart on Pinterest, therefore it's free.
Yeah, no.
And it's like, you know, and so I have regular talks with people in my groups about the fact that just because you see something on Pinterest or on another website as being a free chart doesn't necessarily mean it's a free chart.
Yeah.
And do your due diligence and figure out if it's something that you should nab. And a lot of stitchers, the vast majority for me anyhow, do come to me and say, we saw this snowman or we saw this quilt that looks like your design and it was on a free site or this or that. So we just wanted to make sure that it's really free. And sometimes it is.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it's something that I have put out there. But yeah, copyright is a big thing. And the violations and I know of quite a few designers that it almost kept me from putting PDFs out there.
Uh-huh.
because I was concerned, but it didn't end up being as big of a concern as far as I know. Now, yeah. I know there's stuff out there that is a violation, but you can beat yourself up and try to get everything taken down, but sometimes it's just not worth the energy to do it, you know.
Early on in this podcast, when I listed the links for artists at the end of the page for the podcast, I always tried to include the Pinterest link. And it wasn't very long at all before I just stopped that. And now I refuse to put a Pinterest link anywhere near any of the podcasts just because that. I am not going to encourage people to use Pinterest. It's just riddled with copyright violations and
trying to get them to take things down for you. It's impossible.
No.
I have tried. And I'm just going, I shouldn't have to fill out this great big long form and prove that this is my property, my intellectual property.
Right.
Every time I see a violation, because I can pull up a page on my computer and there's probably 15, 16 violations.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I just don't have time. I don't have time to try to police that. And if they're not going to, it's just, all I can do is tell Stitchers, stay away.
Yeah.
From patterns, that aside, there's inspiration there. There's some great things on Pinterest, but they're just not managing the copyright the way they should.
No, it's such a wild west. Yeah, I just refuse to have anything to do with it. And it's a great concept. It really is for, like you say, for inspiration. But no, it's it does much more damage than good, in my opinion. Not worth
right.
it.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, no. If they, I for a while I was into this whole, I was posting as Carolyn Manning Designs as a comment to some of these violations and saying, this is, you do not have the right to put this pattern up here. It's mine. It's still for sale on my site. It's not a discontinued pattern or anything like that. Please take it down. And sometimes they do. But a lot of times, no, it's still there. Yeah. So.
They're going to take the money. Yep.
Yeah,
it's frustrating. So. All right. On a more positive note, since we're running out of time here.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it's just essential that we talk about it all the time because I think there is a portion of needlework people who do not understand that, I'll use the word ignorance. They just don't, they just don't understand.
Right.
And it's not their fault so you have to help them understand. But then there's the others that you're not supposed to be doing this and you know better.
Right.
And then it's the group that, here, I'll give you a copy. No, I'll get my own. No.
Right.
I'll buy my own because that's not right. That's not legal. It's not legal, but legal is really separate. It's not right. It's just not right. It's theft and it's not right. And no, get your own copy.
Right.
And like you said, $5. Yeah, spring the $5 so that the designer keeps doing it, yeah.
And that's the thing I don't think that people always realize is that you are cutting into the designer's way of living. Their paychecks, So
well, and, that's just it. When you talk about a $10 chart that you would buy in a store, and your sell price to a wholesaler is $5, and then you take printing and all those other things, and you're down to about $2 per copy. But then, if you figure in your time and decades of commitment to design, you're really not making much off of that.
Well, and I don't think people, I make a lot of patterns.
Yeah.
And it's easy for me to, but it's still very, very time intensive because I need to go in and I've got to do the design.
Right.
Then I've got to package up the chart. I've got to do the photography. I've got to do the cover work. I've got all of that. So, a design, even though I'm cranking a lot of them out, I don't want people to think that it's an hour's worth of work and I'm done.
Right.
It's not, yeah. You know, so.
Yeah. Never sit down and calculate what you're making per hour.
Makes me cry. So I stopped doing it. So, because yeah. I genuinely love what I do.
Right.
And I feel so blessed and honored that I'm able to do this for a living. Yeah. Finally. You know, I never, right. ever, I always dreamed of being a full-time artist and I'm doing it. And, you know, I wish I would have started doing it back when I was 18, but cross-stitch designing wasn't even on the radar for me at that point.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. So.
No, it's, I mean, it's just an issue that needs to get constantly talked about.
Yep.
It really
definitely.
Does. Yeah.
Definitely.
All right. So the positive thing before we go away here, what do we got coming up? We got some new designs coming up. Just started a stitch along.
I just started the stitch along. I've got two more pieces that are coming out that will be joining, Sweetheart and Serenity. I haven't named them yet, but one is done kind of in the antique blue colors, and it will be using the classic colorways threads, the same as Serenity and Sweetheart. And then there's a green and red, kind of a brick red piece. So there's four total in that series. So I've got those two. I'm stitching the blue one right now. I've got what else do I have? Got those coming up, and then I've got some smaller small designs, kind of Christmas ornament kind of designs coming out. And I think I might actually try to kick out a few snowmen. I haven't done those in a while, and I've had quite a few stitchers go, "Where'd the snowballs go?" So I might come up with something with that too. I'm playing around with some other quilt block ideas. I've got quite a few requests in for trying to do something with a Dresden plate block design. So I'm doing that. I've got another backsplash kind of Moroccan tile type thing that. Actually I've got it up right now on right next to the Skype window. I've got this pattern up. So I've got that coming up. Sulky just sent me, they've got a new, thread, and I don't have it written down in front of me right now, but it's an acrylic thread that you can brush up and it's kind of got a vintage, more of a vintage wool feel to it, even though it's an acrylic thread.
That's interesting.
They sent me the whole collection with it, all the threads, and it even has a little brush with it.
Really?
So it kind of mimics, what is it, Whisper, that you can use for like Santa's beards.
Right, yeah.
And that kind of thing, or animal fur. So I'm playing around with that right now. I don't have any actual designs. I'm just kind of playing with the thread right now to see what it'll do. And then Sulky also has a whole bunch of new variegated, blendables, the 12 weight threads, the cotton petite threads that they have, a whole bunch of new colors with that. So I've got some ideas kicking around in my head with things to do with that as well. So there's quite a few, there are various stages of stuff. But winter, you know, we get snowed in up here and you're not going anywhere. So I've got nothing better to do than sit and play. So
Nothing wrong with that. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
Well, that's excellent. Well, Carolyn, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Carolyn Manning Designs is .com is the website, and Instagram, that's where I found you. And there's a ton of it. So thank you, Carolyn, and thanks to everyone for listening.
Thank you.